Hey there, welcome to 3 hours of live and local radio on WNTK 99.7 FM in Newport, New Hampshire, and WUVR 98.9 FM, 1490 AM in Lebanon. This is Saturday Sports Talk, your weekly catch-up on what's happening in Upper Valley High School, College, and otherwise sports. Greg Fennell with you for the next hour as we talk about a variety of things. Got 2 weeks of catching up to do with Dartmouth sports. Thank you to Bob Hingston and Rob Woodard for filling in for me on an emergency day off last week. So we get to do a little catching up on what's happening with the Big Green teams for spring, and also some news off of the field of note for Dartmouth Athletics that's occurred in the last couple of weeks that you're going to find interesting. Also, one thing that we don't talk about a whole lot, but has every bit to do with sports, at least from a journalistic standpoint, recreation. And there's been some interesting developments with the Mascoma River Greenway in Lebanon that I think folks who use that path are going to be excited to hear about. So we'll talk about that as well. And some thoughts on the Masters, some interesting realizations that came upon me after watching yesterday and looking back to coverage I was able to do from the Masters about 20 years ago involving a former Upper Valley golf resident. So that's all on the menu here for this first hour of the 3 hours of live and local today from the Hilton Garden Inn on Le Bombard Road in Lebanon, right off of Route 120. That's where we do things every Saturday morning, and when I'm done, we hand the microphone over to Woody and Hinger as they will take on Valley Buzz duties again coming up at 10:06 after the news and weather. Of course, Bob doing a lot of filling in for Rich Parker. This is his time of the year to be coaching Dartmouth College men's golf, I should say, and we'll hear from Rich again sometime in the next couple of weeks once the Ivy League season winds down, but Hinger doing a real nice job filling in with Woody. They'll talk baseball and all sorts of other stuff as well on Valley Buzz at 10:06 up till noon. That'll be your 3 hours of live and local this morning. We go live again at 3:10 this afternoon for Boston Red Sox baseball. Sox not having a whole lot of luck at home this week after a real nice western road trip to start the baseball season. They got the LA Angels in town. 4:10 first pitch. 3:10 is the pre-game time on NTK. Tobin's in the studio in Newport. 603-843-8623. You can call at any time to move the conversation in whatever direction you wish to go. Until that point, we do what we always do here on Saturday Sports Talk, aside from drink a lot of coffee and talk a whole lot. We talk about what happened in the world of sports last night, because not everything that happened in sports on Friday make it Saturday's newspaper. We shall read about it. You don't have to be a deep aficionado of American film to at least know the basics of Gone with the Wind, the famed novel from Margaret Mitchell that was released in 1936. The film with Clark Gable, Vivian Leigh, Leslie Howard, and Olivia de Havilland came out 3 years after that, one of the great films of America's cinema. Well, yesterday they staged a revival at Augusta National Golf Club. Serious wind action in the Cathedral of Golf really messed with the players in the second round of the Masters yesterday. There were only 8 scores below par, 1 below 70, a 69 by Simon Åberg from Sweden, a couple of 70s and 571s that included former Woodstock High School golfer Keegan Bradley. It was a rough day on the course yesterday, and even for some guys who had to finish off their first rounds because Thursday's first round was delayed 2.5 hours by weather in Augusta, Georgia. All that left was, well, a whole lot of wreckage on the course, and 3 guys tied for the lead. Max Homa, Bryson DeChambeau, and Scottie Scheffler, all at 6-under par through the first 36 holes of play. The cut turned out to be rather interesting. Throughout much of the afternoon, it looked like it was going to be a 4-over par when Tiger Woods was out there trying to make his record-setting 24th straight Masters cut. It looked like he might be like right on the line, but he made it very easily at 1-over par. It started at 4-over, moved to 5, and then very late in the day, bumped up to 6, and that allowed Keegan Bradley to actually make it. Early in the tournament, he looked like he was done and dusted. He shot a 77 or a 78 in the first round. He was one stroke off of last place, came back with a 71 yesterday, one of the few rounds to break par. 5 over, made it by a stroke to play, and will play into the weekend. A rarity for him, because Keegan usually doesn't play Augusta National all that well compared to other majors that he's been in his golf career. Other golfers of note, first-time Masters competitor Nikolai Hallgaard is 2 shots off the pace. Cam Davis, Colin Morikawa, 3 back. Åberg, who had the round of the day yesterday at 69, 4 shots off the pace. And a variety of other golfers of note doing reasonably well. A variety of other golfers not doing reasonably well. John Rahm, the defending Masters champion, had to come up with a couple of strokes saved right at the end yesterday in order to make that cut of five over par. There are a lot of former champions who are not going to be participating this weekend because of how poorly they played. Justin Thomas, one of them, melting down for his second straight year, missed the cut by one, going double, double bogey, double over his last four holes. Dreadful, losing seven shots that quickly, but that's what happens in the wind at Augusta National. British Open champion Brian Harman, he's not going. Jordan Spieth, Wyndham Clark, Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, all past champions of majors, all not playing this weekend at Augusta because they could not handle the wind yesterday. Tiger Woods did, despite the issues, of course, dealing with his bad back, his surgically repaired legs, having to have to walk 23 holes on a course that is far more hilly than you can believe if you watch it on television, but he got the job done. One over par yesterday through 36 holes, so he will play into the weekend. He remains very optimistic that he can win a record-tying sixth Masters green jacket. But he's not hitting a lot of greens, fewer than half. He's got to rely on his short game and putting a lot more than he's had in the past, rather than his distance off the tee. Can he do it? I don't think so, but he's there, and that's more than a lot of golfers can say after a very windy second round at Augusta yesterday. Speaking of things that appear to be gone with the wind, the Red Sox season already. They had a fine Western road trip, 7 wins in 10 games, and they came home and got skunked by the Baltimore Orioles and got skunked even worse by the Los Angeles Angels last night, 7-0 at Fenway, in a game you unfortunately heard on WNTK. In all truth, though, the Red Sox did it to themselves. 3 errors early, dropped them into a 4-0 hole, and they just never got out of it last night. Defense, especially middle defense, has been particularly bad lately, not helped by the loss of Trevor Story for the season with that dislocated shoulder. So the Red Sox will turn around, try to pick it back up again and get that first win at Fenway if they can today. It's a 3:10 broadcast time here on WNTK 99.7 FM. So they take on the Halos at Fenway Park. Off the field, of course, injury news, surgery for Trevor Story done yesterday. He is lost for the season from that fractured shoulder. Rafi Devers also having a shoulder issue right now. It looks like he won't be playing again until at least a Sunday. It's a nagging injury that's been bothering him for the past couple of weeks. Meanwhile, some roster moves. Bobby Dalbec called up from AAA Worcester, right-handed pitcher Isaiah Campbell, who was so awful in the 10th inning of that loss to Baltimore midweek, in which the Orioles had 6 runs in the 10th inning to blow up a tie game that had been close at the time. But one bit of good news, Vaughn Grissom, the second baseman who was picked up in the Chris Sale trade from Atlanta, was activated yesterday, starting a rehab assignment to complete recovery from injuries to left groin and left hamstring. He started his rehab at Worcester yesterday, went 0-for-3 as a DH in a game up in Syracuse, New York. We move on to other elements of the sports world. Well, scoreboard for the Major League Baseball world first. Detroit beat Minnesota 8-2, Pirates over the Phillies 5-2, Tampa Bay 2, the Giants 1, Milwaukee beat Baltimore 11-1, Rockies over the Blue Jays 12-4, the Braves were 8-1 winners in Miami over the Marlins, Mets were 6-1 winners in Kansas City, Reds over the White Sox 11-1, Rangers 12 and Astros 8, Mariners beat the Cubs 4-2 out west, Arizona loses at home to St. Louis 9-6, The A's got a run in the bottom of the ninth, beat Washington 2-1, Padres over the Dodgers in 11, that was 8-7, that A's-Nats game was actually a 10-inning affair for Oakland. Yankees and Guardians rained out in Cleveland, they will play 2 moving on later on today. Off the field, the former interpreter for Shohei Ohtani has been ordered to undergo court-ordered gambling addiction treatment after federal prosecutors accused him of stealing $16 million from the Japanese baseball star to pay off debts. From the field at Dodger Stadium yesterday, Ohtani said he was, quote, very grateful for the investigation. He's going to concentrate on baseball from here. Meantime, Ipe Mizuhara, who surrendered to authorities at the end of the week, facing 30 years in prison on account of bank fraud after posting a bond on Friday. Now we move to hockey. What are we going to call them? The Salt Lake City Shakers or maybe the Utah Unitarians? One way or the other, the Arizona Coyotes are apparently moving to Utah next year. Arizona players have been informed by the club that they are expected to relocate next year. GM Bill Armstrong flew to Edmonton to tell the players before their game against the Oilers on Friday, according to anonymous sources talking to the Associated Press. Players and officials could visit Salt Lake City next week and could end up playing there as soon as after this season. They're right now, of course, in the second year at 5,000-seat Mullet Arena in Tempe as the secondary tenant to the Arizona State men's hockey team. The Coyotes have been a failure in in the desert ever since they moved there from Winnipeg. They've gone through bankruptcy, multiple owners, multiple failed arena schemes, and right now saying they're going to try to win a land auction in order to develop a new arena in the Phoenix area. The NHL appears to have said enough is enough and is looking to buy the team and then sell it over to a group in Salt Lake City that owns the Utah Jazz and is ready to build a new arena for the team. So changes coming to the NHL roster next year. Scoreboard from last night: Carolina beating St. Louis 5-2, Nashville 5, Chicago 1, the soon-to-be Utah Somebodies beating Edmonton 3-2 in overtime. Flames over the Ducks in Anaheim by a 6-3 count, and Vegas routed Minnesota 7-2. We are in the final weekend of the regular season for the NHL. Bruins already solidly in the playoffs right now, still trying to determine what their slot's going to be. They're going to be in Pittsburgh tonight in a game that has major playoff implications in the East, visiting the Penguins. Why? Well, there are four teams right now battling for that last wild card spot in the East. The Penguins have it at 86 points. Washington, Detroit, Philadelphia all have 85, although Philly has played one more game. They do still remain in that playoff picture. Capitals doing their late season fade. They usually save it for the playoffs, but have been doing it at the end of the regular season. They may be too tired to compete any further. Plus, they host Tampa Bay tonight. Pittsburgh pretty much in the driver's seat, and they get the win tonight. They're going to be very much in the driver's seat to get into the playoffs. The West is all set. We know who the eight teams are. Still might be some shuffling in the final games of the regular season, which ends on Wednesday. Macklin Celebrini from Boston University wins the Hobey Baker Award, even though his BU Terriers got knocked out in overtime by Denver in the Frozen Four on Thursday. Boston College, season-long number one, they will take on Denver for the NCAA championship in St. Paul coming up tonight. Elsewhere in sports, NBA last night. Let's talk about the Celtics. They've been giving their regulars a rest. They've already secured the best record in the NBA. They're 14 games better than anybody in the East, so you can expect them to lose a few games because they haven't been playing the regulars. They didn't last night, and they still routed Charlotte by a 131-98 count. Peyton Pritchard with a career-high 31 points as the Celtics rested Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Jrue Holiday, Derek White, Kristaps Porzingis, and Al Horford. All are facing nagging injuries right now, but you got everything secure? Why run them? The Celtics will end the regular season against Washington on Sunday. Scoreboard last night: Chicago 129-27 over Washington. Sixers won, so did the Knicks. The Cavaliers also victories coming up last night for San Antonio over Denver, which has created a three-team tie for the number one seed in the West, thanks to that upset by the Spurs yesterday. Oklahoma City, Minnesota, the Lakers, Miami, Detroit, Houston also won last night. New Orleans, the Phoenix Suns, and the Utah Jazz all victorious on a very busy night in the NBA last night. Bruce Arena, former New England Revolution manager slash coach, has been cleared to pursue jobs in Major League Soccer. He was suspended by the league following an investigation into insensitive and inappropriate remarks in the workplace, which led him to re-sign his position with the Revs last year. He has gone through the rehabilitative process, so to speak, and can pursue jobs, although there are no openings right now. The Revolution hosting New York City FC coming up, actually down in New York City on the evening, and in the world of auto racing, NASCAR in Texas for the weekend. And that's what's happening in the world of sports on Saturday Sports Talk, and read about it. We're going to talk a little Dartmouth next when we come back in just a little bit here on NTK and UVR. .22 and change here on a Saturday Sports Talk on a sunny morning for April 13th. Kind of hoping that it'll stay that way after the rain we've had the past couple of days. I've got afternoon duties doing PA announcing up at Dartmouth Lacrosse today. The women playing at 12 o'clock against Columbia, the men against Yale at 3:30. I was joking with Hinger beforehand that I've done two men's lacrosse games this winter, or this season, I should say. The first one was the last weekend in February. It was in the 20s and blowing, so it was a lot cooler than the thermometer said. One game in the end of March, which was played in a 2-foot snowstorm. So the initial forecast that I was looking at was maybe a little bit of light rain, temperatures in the 40s today. And that represents a step up compared to the last two times doing lacrosse over at Dartmouth. But it's looking nice. It's cooler than it was yesterday, but not a bad start to the day so far. Hinger and Woody, of course, coming up for Valley Buzz at 10:06. I'm Greg Fennell. This is Saturday Sports Talk. Tobin's in the studio at 603-843-8623. Hinger and Woody were kind enough to fill in for me last week on a last-minute basis because of a family issue, and that leaves us with a couple of weeks of catching up to do with Dartmouth sports, not just in terms of stuff on the schedule, but stuff happening off the ice in this case, in what amounted to be not a great amount of surprise, but still gratifying nonetheless. Cooper Black is done with his Dartmouth College career, the big 6'8 goaltender, who was such an important part of the Big Green's run to the ECAC semifinals this year. A couple of weeks after the season got done, signed an entry-level contract, 2-year deal with the Florida Panthers. Working Dartmouth softball a couple of weeks ago, I met one of his hockey teammates who told me that 20 teams had contract offers for Black ready for him when the college season got done. So it wasn't a question so much of would it happen as it was it's going to happen, and that's a really encouraging thing for him. Cooper, a very solid goaltender this past year. He had a 13-8-8 mark personally for a team that went 13-10-9, started 29 of the 32 games, 2.59 goals against average, .91 save percentage. I did get to see him twice, and my impressions were that he had the tendency to give up the weak goal occasionally, but for the most part was a solid backstop for somebody as big as he is. And I'm pretty sure he's the tallest goaltender I've ever seen. It used to be back in the early days when I was a kid and watching the Washington Capitals that you ran across the occasional 6'4", 6'5 guy on the occasion. 6'8", that was monstrous. But Cooper handled the job well. And interestingly, he's a guy who was kind of a late bloomer to hockey as well. If you go back and catch Tris Wyke's feature on him from the local paper from a couple of weeks ago, it gives a bit of his background in that hockey. It wasn't necessarily going to be the sport for him, but ultimately it did. He got his opportunities at the junior level, came to Dartmouth, played 2 years here, was certainly very solid this past year as the Big Green. Not only qualified for the playoffs, but had that great end-of-season run that bumped them up from 9th in the league standings to 4th. Got that all-important first round bye in the ECAC tournament, swept their way through Union, and went off to Lake Placid where they got knocked off in the semifinals in a game they actually led going into the third period. Dartmouth was a good enough team at the end of the year to seriously compete for a league title and an NCAA spot. So that provides encouragement for next year for Reed Cashman and company, but it also puts a big question mark in goal. The big 6'8 kid's no longer there, and the guys who played behind him don't have a whole lot of experience, so that's going to be where they're going to have to really concentrate when preseason gets started next August and September back here at Thompson Arena. Now, back to what's happening locally. It's actually a relatively active day around Hanover as far as college sports are concerned, as three of the four spring ball teams are going to be in town. Baseball is home taking on Brown in a doubleheader today, and very much in need of some success. The Big Green had a two-win weekend early in the season. I want to say that was at Yale, and a really nice start to the year, but everything has kind of gone downhill since then for the Big Green, which has been swept in back-to-back weekends, most recently by a good Columbia team that did not only just beat Dartmouth, but beat them with a stick. A couple of games that went would have been 10-run games in other leagues if the Ivy League used the 10-run early quit rule. So here's the hope that the Big Green can have a little bit more success this weekend with Brown in town, a team that is of a similar record to the Big Green. Dartmouth is 2-7 in league play so far this year, and 7-16 overall. On the plus side, more than double their win total of last year. Brown 8-18 overall, 3-6 in the Ivy League. Both teams toward the bottom, looking up. at the top four. And again, top four now make the Ivy League Baseball Tournament, where it used to be just the top two playing in a best of three series. Columbia in charge, 8-1 in the league, 14-12 overall. They are the only school in the Ivy League that is above 500 overall. Cornell close behind at 6-3, and then Penn and Princeton each 5-4, holding those last two spots. So Dartmouth now, what do you play, 21 league games? They played 9 so far, so there's a lot to go, but they're going to have to get on a streak here because they're in the basement at 2-7, a game behind Brown and Harvard that are both at 3-6. First game today for Dartmouth will be at 12 noon, I believe, and then they'll play a single game tomorrow at noon over at Red Rolf Field for Dartmouth baseball. Here's the hope that Bob Whalen and company can pick up the victories this weekend. It's a lacrosse doubleheader going on over at Scully Fahey Field. It begins with the women's team. They have Columbia in town. Dartmouth trying to put itself in a position to compete for an Ivy League lacrosse tournament spot. And there is still some hope as far as the Big Green is concerned right now, but they're at the point where they're starting to play a few teams that they should be able to beat and need to beat. 0-4 Dartmouth is in league play. They are 6-5 overall, so running out of opportunities here to bump up the standings. Two games behind Penn Cornell and Brown, who are all 2-2 in league play and holding down that fourth and final spot in the four-team Ivy League tournament. Going into the weekend, Dartmouth taking on a Columbia team that is also winless in four games in the league, 3-8 overall. It is a noontime start at Scully Fahey Field. And what's also kind of nice about this, and it will carry on into the men's game later on today, it is Mental Health Awareness Day. The Big Green is welcoming back alumni to celebrate Alumni Day as well. Post game autograph session for the women's game. The Mental Health Awareness Day, though, thing is a big deal as far as I'm concerned. It's something that we deal with quietly, suffer with quietly, with either ourselves or our family members. And the more we can learn about how mental health affects overall health and take away the stigma of it being something that you don't talk about to anybody, the better off we're all going to be. So if you get a chance, talk to the folks about Mental Health Awareness Day at Scully Fahey Field, either for the women's game at 12 or the men's game that will follow at at 3:30 today. Pardon me, I think I got a poppy seed in my teeth from breakfast. The Big Green men's lacrosse team continues to be a work in progress, brand-new coach this year. They have shown some optimistic tendencies, but again, the one thing that has bedeviled Dartmouth men's lacrosse for the past 10 years continues to do so right now, and that is competition within the Ivy League. Dartmouth is 0-3 in league play. Only Brown is winless in league play as well as the Big Green take on Yale today. I've already said before, but I'll say it again. The Ivy League, if it's not the best men's lacrosse conference in the country, is pretty darn close. They routinely put five teams in the national tournament. You look at the standings right now, Yale, Cornell, Penn, Princeton, Harvard, they are all 7-3, 7-4, or 8-2. They all have very good overall records, and it kind of turns into a battle of attrition when the men's lacrosse season gets to league play, and Dartmouth often finds itself standing on the outside looking in. So an opportunity today to see where Sean Kerwin has the Big Green. From what I've seen, this is a team that likes to play a deliberate style of lacrosse. Whenever they get opportunities for odd man rushes, they pull the ball up and run their offense instead. That strikes me as teaching. That strikes me as a way that Sean can keep some control over how this team develops, work on one aspect of the game, try to perfect it, and then they can advance to more success in unsettled situations. But that takes away an element, a very important element of the lacrosse game, when you deny yourself those opportunities on the odd man rush, perhaps, kind of like hockey. Yale, I've seen on TV at least once. They're a very talented squad, leading the league right now with that 3-1 league record, or I should say that 8-2 overall record, 3-1 in league play with Cornell and Penn right on them, Princeton right on them as well. It's going to be a big test for Dartmouth this afternoon. Again, that's a 3:30 start. Keep that in mind, because initially it was going to be a 4 o'clock start, and then when they decided to make this joint Mental Health Awareness Day thing. They moved it up a half hour so there wouldn't be quite as much of a delay between the women's and the men's games. Again, 3:30 is the face-off for Dartmouth and Yale. Men's lacrosse going on today up in Hanover for Mental Health Awareness Day. The one ball team that is not playing home this weekend is softball. They're down at Princeton. And it's been an interesting couple weeks. There's been a lot of optimism around the Big Green, even with the tiny roster, even with all the injuries that Coach Jen Williams has had to deal with. But last weekend was kind of curious. They had Brown in town. For the weekend set, freshman Jensen Hall threw a 17-strikeout one-hitter on Saturday in the opening game of the doubleheader. Rachel McCarroll came back, got the win in the second game. And, I'm sorry, my mistake. It was a single game on Saturday because of weather. They played a doubleheader on Sunday. And curiously, Coach Williams threw Rachel McCarroll in both games. She won the opener, threw very well, and then in the nightcap, hits and errors and all sorts of bizarre stuff created I think it was a 9-8 ball game. Dartmouth leading in the sixth inning. They had one strike, or seventh inning, one strike to go to get out of it. Gave up a 3-run homer and ultimately lost 12-9 to a team they should have beaten. They followed that up by going down to Harvard on Tuesday for a makeup game from earlier this year. Lost that 4-2 with Rachel in the circle again. So I'm really kind of wondering what the thought process is. I was starting to think why Jensen didn't pitch in either game Sunday was because Jen was saving her for the Harvard contest. Didn't turn out to be that way, although she did take the designated player role, did bat in that game. So maybe it's a health issue. We're only going to find out when we see what happens when the Big Green goes down to Princeton today in games that now are starting to have a whole lot of import to them. Princeton and Dartmouth find themselves tied for the third and fourth spots in the league standings. And again, top four make the Ivy softball tournament. Columbia leads at 7-2. Yale, whom Dartmouth has beaten in a series this weekend, is 9-3. And Harvard is right behind at 6-6. And it looks like it's going to be those five battling for those four spots. Dartmouth has already lost a series to Harvard, playing Princeton, hasn't played Columbia yet. There's a lot of ball to play. This is a good enough team to get to the Ivy tournament, but they don't have a lot of room for any more errors, or injuries, I should say. Mary Beth Cahalan is their best hitter, but she's also their catcher. If she gets hurt, the backup, Aliotti, is playing in a knee brace right now. That's not going to happen. That's just one of many examples of the things that Dartmouth softball is going to have to worry about as the season continues now into the heart of Ivy League play. We are looking at 9:35. I'm Greg Fennell, and as I noted in the intro, sports from a journalistic sense around here is more than just high school scores and college scores and stuff like that. Recreation is an important thing. We don't talk about it a whole lot, so there's some interesting news I'm going to tell you about recreation locally in Lebanon when we come back. So stick around. This is Saturday Sports Talk, WNTK and WUVR. .41 on Saturday Sports Talk with your mandatory Ramones. We do it at the end of the second break. Every edition of Saturday Sports Talk, a little bit of a taste of what you may have missed from the 1980s and 90s. And the one place where you can find it. Strange place to find it, but hey, Ramones rule for as far as I'm concerned here on Saturday Sports Talk. Greg Fennell with you. Red Sox baseball coming up again this afternoon. Nice to be able to say that again, because at least it gives you a feeling that warm weather may finally be on its way after two annoying snowstorms here in the Upper Valley. If we just want to just get over the results, we'll be okay. You know, last night Sox pretty much did themselves in early with three errors. They lose 7-0 to Los Angeles. The Angels will play again, 3:10 broadcast, 4:10 first pitch on NTK this afternoon. Let's hope for a little bit better luck. They've got, four games with Cleveland next week. Of course, Monday is the annual Patriots Day game coinciding with the Boston Marathon. So 11 o'clock a.m. Contest there. And then I believe They hit the road after that, but I don't recall where. It's I think it's basically a 10-game homestand after a 10-game road trip. Extremes either end of it for the Red Sox right now. Of course, dealing with injuries, Trevor Story done for the year. He had a shoulder surgery yesterday. Nick Pivetta on the sidelines, their best pitcher. It couldn't really be much worse right now as far as the injury is concerned for a team that is fairly thin and not expected to do a whole lot this year. Looked good for a week and a half, but I think we're getting thrown back to reality. Anyway, moving into a different realm of sports. In the years in which I actually worked for a print publication, recreation was paramount in coverage of what happened in the Upper Valley. Maybe not to the extent of high school games and college stories and things like that, but there are times of the year when there's not a whole lot going on and it's a perfect time to get involved in recreation stuff. I worked with a couple of people, one from a contract standpoint, Marty Bash, for many years, who wrote outdoors columns about hiking and bike riding, all sorts of outdoor exercise activities in the woods all over the Northeast and in Quebec. Jared Pendak was a fellow sports writer who did a column occasionally that he called Trail Trials, in which he went off and hiked trails in the Upper Valley and wrote about them, something that affected me and got me out doing a little bit of the same when the pandemic broke out. We're blessed here in Lebanon to have two fantastic recreational trails. One is the Northern Rail Trail that covers 60 miles from Lebanon to Bosquin, just north of Concord. Vast majority of it unpaved, although Lebanon did pave about a half-mile section at the northern terminus opposite the CCBA Witherell Recreation Center a couple of years ago. And there's the Mascoma River Greenway, which, if and when completed, will cover the 4 to 4.5 miles that separate downtown Lebanon from downtown West Lebanon. The first segment opened up a few years ago, and it looks like it's going to be getting an extension sometime in the reasonable near future. On Thursday, Paul Coates, who is the fantastic director of Recreation Parks and Art, I believe it is, in Lebanon, posted a 10-minute video on YouTube in which he explained where things stand for the upcoming extension that Lebanon is planning. Right now, the western terminus of the Mascoma River Greenway, after 2.5 miles from downtown Lebanon, ends in a rather inconvenient spot. It's on Glen Road. There is a dirt parking lot that might hold 3 cars at most. It's not very convenient. And it's about, maybe a quarter to a half mile away from the West Lebanon Skate Park. But the trail could go no further than the Mascoma River Bridge behind or underneath what is the Terry Dudley Bridge, and could go no further because the tracks had not been declared abandoned by the state of New Hampshire. Well, Lebanon has done its legwork. It has gotten the necessary approvals, for the most part, from what I gathered from the video that Paul posted, and has a plan in place to extend the trail all the way down to Route 12A. What would happen is there is a stretch of, I would guess, maybe half to three-quarters of a mile of rail that would have to be cleared of vegetation, have the rail stripped, the ties stripped, and have somebody come in to pave it. It would cross two bridges, and you see both those bridges as you come down the bend on Glen Road, as you're heading downhill toward 12A, that little left-hand swing that follows the elbow in the river. Those two bridges would have to be rehabilitated. The westernmost one has a ramp nearby that could be paved to get people from the elevated portion where the rail is to a lower level of land right by Glen Road on the opposite side of that stone arch bridge that only one car can go through at a time. And as the map shows, and you can find this by going to MascomaRiverGreenway.com, you'll see the Mascoma River Greenway extension photograph, and then the link to the YouTube presentation is just below it. The trail as proposed would then go around behind the, I think it's called Riverside Park, but it goes down behind the West Lebanon Skate Park, follows a berm that's already there, unpaved, sort of a trail, and then would sneak around behind the powerhouse, which is private land. Paul noted that they are in negotiations right now and that the people who own the powerhouse are actually excited by the notion of having the Mascoma River Greenway go around behind them rather than using, for instance, Glen Road as a way to transport vehicles, bicycles that is, and would finally terminate right about the intersection of Glen Road and Route 12A and Market Street, the light by where the Hannaford is. It's really exciting to think about this. As Paul noted, the original plan was for the trail to cross over Glen Road and then follow a road that goes through what is now Twin State Sand and Gravel. It was going to be a commercial development called Iron Horse that never got through the regulation process of the city. I think it's pretty much a dead issue. And it would have picked up on Elm Street West and eventually gotten down to the base of Seminary Hill. Now, at least there is a plan for this thing to be extended into the shopping district, so to speak, of West Lebanon, so that anybody who wants to, 12 months out of the year, of course, you know, six of those being winter, but still could get from downtown Lebanon to the busiest part of West Lebanon without having to use a car to get there. And my wife and I have been on the Mascoma River Greenway. We are big fans of it. My wife loves to ride her bike downhill, east to west, where there is a little bit of a slope. But it always kind of scares me. By the time we get to Glen Road, what we often do is we'll take our truck, because it's the only thing that fits both of our bikes right now. We'll get started out at Mascoma Lake at Ice House Road, which is about 4 miles of territory on the Northern Rail Trail. And I'll turn around by the time we get near Forward's Garage after a couple of miles, go back, get the truck, and then she'll keep riding. And eventually she gets to the end of Glen Road at the end of the Greenway and rides Glen Road, which has a bicycle ride section on either shoulder, but it's very tiny, and I don't trust drivers around here, so it frightens me every time we both get on there that one of us is going to get nailed by an inattentive driver. And then rides to the skate park parking lot, and that's where I pick her up. So it excites me to know that hopefully, and Paul doesn't give any kind of a timeline on this, but hopefully, now that a plan is in place and most of the approvals are there, that this is going to happen soon. They have the money. He says it's going to cost $2.4 million. They've got a $1.9 million grant. They've got about $400,000 of other money, I believe maybe is donations, and $100,000 left over from the fund that paid for the initial paving of the 2.5 miles that already exists. So this is really, really exciting, and I'm really hoping to see it in my lifetime, my lifetime hopefully being less than 2 years. To know that sometime soon, if I want to dare myself, I can ride from my home in West Lebanon down 12A and pick up the Mascoma River Greenway somewhere around the powerhouse and ride to downtown Lebanon if I so want to. And it thrills me to know that this could happen sometime soon. So good on you, Paul Coates, City of Lebanon. Keep up the good work. I'm looking forward to seeing this get finalized. Again, MascomaRiverGreenway.com. You'll find what is the part one of a presentation, the end of which says stay tuned for part two. So I'll be curious to see when part two drops, maybe next week, at which time hopefully we'll get a timeline of when the Mascoma River Greenway extension, not necessarily completion. I think the dream is to have it into old part of West Lebanon down by the former railroad roundabout, but at least progress, and progress is always a good thing. Thank you, Paul, for all you do for the City of Lebanon. Let's take a time out, and when we come back, some thoughts on the Masters, because it used to be something that the local paper could cover because it had credentials, and I got to do it a half dozen times. Studying what happened yesterday, I found some interesting parallels to 19 years ago, the last time I was down there. I'll tell you what in a second. This is Saturday Sports Talk at WNTK and WUVR.
Looking for a friend, she'll get what she wants, can't seem to get enough.
9:54 and change here on Saturday Sports Talk. Thinking about days of the week and pulling our music together today and stretching beyond the 80s and even the 90s a little bit, where we usually find our tunage. Blondie's Sunday Girl from 1978, Marshall Crenshaw's Monday Morning Rock, Joe Jackson's Friday, or Mandatory Ramones came off of Adios Amigos, their last studio album entitled Have a Nice Day. Dave Edmonds, Almost Saturday Night, and what you were just listening to coming out of the break. Stone Temple Pilots from 2001, Days of the Week, where they cover just about every day of the week in their song. That's what we were thinking about here for our tunage on Saturday Sports Talk today. Thank you, Tobin, for pulling all that up. Masters is the one golf tournament that I still watch. I was joking with family members yesterday. We were all sitting in the living room watching second round action, and that the amount of golf I watched yesterday was probably more than about the last 2 years combined. As a golf fan, I've been totally turned off by the split between PGA Tour and the blood money funded LIV Tour, and all of the traitorous American golfers who turned their backs on professional golf as it has developed over the years and instead went for the dirty money. Guys like Bryson DeChambeau and Bryce Koepka and Patrick Reed, who've really made watching Americans playing golf depressing because of their greed and self-centeredness. This opportunity for the Masters gets everybody back together again. And while it doesn't solve golf's ills, at least it does make for a more complete picture of professional golf. But I'm still rooting against the guys who left the PGA Tour because they did so for selfish interest. What I found interesting, though, seeing how the wind screwed up play, I got the chance to cover a half dozen Masters. And when you come from this part of the country where winter dominates things so much and the opportunity to play is rare, when you go down to Georgia in the first weekend or second weekend of April, you're getting your first chance at seeing something green, and playing golf is not necessarily what's on the top of mind. And it's hard to find stories to localize at the Masters, but fortunately you can usually find something. And in my case, the last one was in 2005 when Austin Eaton III, Ace Eaton from Lake Sunapee Country Club, qualified by winning the U.S. Mid-Amateur, which got him an automatic invitation to the Masters. And we had the credentials, so we went on down. And I was looking back at the stories I wrote at the time, which largely centered around him, obviously, because it was, you know, the rare opportunity when an Upper Valley golfer actually played in this thing. But what I noticed was he missed the cut and missed it by a bit at 5 over par through 2 rounds of play, which were delayed by weather, not unlike yesterday. 5 over par, he would have made the cut if he was playing now. But things have also changed a little bit. The cut back in 2005 was the top 44 golfers in ties. Now, for whatever reason, it's the top 50 in ties. The cut that came after yesterday's second round was not terribly punitive. 89 guys in the field, only 29 didn't qualify for the last two rounds of play. That doesn't strike me as all that tough. On the other hand, Keegan Bradley, our Woodstock native, got in and is playing this weekend because of that. But had Ace Eaton been there this year, he would have advanced, and he and his dad would have been ambling around Augusta National for 2 more days. But it was still kind of fun to be around somebody in Ace, who, by the way, lives now in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities area. He's a real estate agent, has a couple of kids, still plays golf. I think his kids probably play golf too now. To see a guy who really did appreciate the opportunity, knew about the on-course challenge, getting past the cut was going to be hugely difficult, no matter how much Augusta National invests in amateur golf, there's still a wide gap between the best amateurs in the world and the best professionals in the world. You would expect that. So he knew what the challenge was going to be, but he's somebody who had knowledge of golf play, golf technique, and golf history in him, so he could appreciate being there. He got the chance to play a couple of times in advance, having qualified, so he knew what he was getting into. His dad, who was the caddy on his bag 19 years ago, had played the course 20 years prior, so he was familiar with the course itself. What you don't get is the crowds, and necessarily the wind like yesterday, and the pressure, and everybody else is out there, but he did what he could. Most famously, securing a 9-hole practice round with Tiger Woods and Mark O'Meara on the day before the tournament got started. and really realized everything he wanted to realize. That was fun to follow and fun to remember 19 years after the fact. All right, that does it for today's edition of Saturday Sports Talk. We got Hinger and Woody coming up with Valley Buzz in just a few minutes. They'll take you up until 12 o'clock. And then you got Red Sox baseball. 3:10 is the broadcast time, 4:10 first pitch, as the Sox and Angels play at Fenway again today. I'm Greg Fennell. This has been Saturday Sports Talk at WNTK and WUVR. Enjoy the weekend, folks.